Can everybody hear me?
Yes, Guru Gar.
Okay. So, Chaturdashodhyayaha Gunatraya Vibhaga Yogaha. So, in the Jnana Shatka, we started with 13th chapter, which was Kshetra Kshetrajna Vibhaga Yogaha, in which Bhagavan started explaining about the difference between the Anatma and the Atma. Kshetram being the Anatma, the Prakriti, and Kshetrajna being the Atma Vastu, the consciousness principle. The same two principles or the same two entities are also called Prakriti and Purusha. The Kshetra and Kshetrajna. Those who are not talking, please mute. Prakriti and Purusha, they are also called Kshetra and Kshetrajna. So the difference between Prakriti and Purusha or Kshetra and Kshetrajna, Krishna has explained. And he said that Prakriti and Purusha both are anadi. They are co-evil. So they both being anadi, but Prakriti has an antam which ends in jnana. When the jnana dawns, and from then onwards only Purusha remains, the Atmavastu remains, the Brahmavatartham remains, and Prakriti or the Maya ends at that point. But beginning, there is no beginning for both of them because they have been there forever. And the Prakriti being the Maya Shakti of Parabrahman or Purusha. Now, all that he has explained, and he ended with the message that Atmavastu, although being in one in the Shariram or within the Prakriti, it is Asangam. Anadithvata, Nirgunathvata, Paramatmayam Avyeha, Sharirasthopi Kaunteya, Nakaroti, Nalipyate. Nalipyate, it is not attached to anything. So Atmavastu, although is responsible for lending the consciousness to all the Prakriti, but Prakriti is Janam, Atma is the Chaitanya Swarupam. But Atma is Asangam. Atma does not get any of the results of what Prakriti is doing. So that is how he ended, by delineating between the Prakriti and Purusha. Now Purusha or the Atmavastu or Brahmapadartham he has been talking about for a long time. In Bhagavad Gita, starting from Sankhya Yoga itself, what is how is Atma different from Prakriti? Nainan Chindanti Shastrani, Nainan Dahati Pavakaha, all those descriptions he has given about how Atma is Asangam. Now he is going to explain a little more about the Prakriti, Anatma. Anatma he is going to explain a little more in this chapter. So because that differentiation he has made in chapter 13, now in this chapter he is going to talk about Atma, Anatma. And in the following chapter, chapter 15, Purushottama Yoga, he is going to talk a little more about Atma, Atma Vastu or Brahma Vastu. So in this, he is going to explain a little bit more about the Prakriti part of it, Anatma part of it. So what does he say in Chaturdashodhyayaha? He says, Parambhuyaha pravakshyami jnananam jnanamuttamam yad jnatva ar yaj jnatva munayas sarve param siddhimitogataha. So I am going to now explain you the Parambhuyaha pravakshyami jnananam jnanamuttamam. Out of all the jnanas, this is the uttamottama jnanam. This is the most supreme knowledge because this is the Atma Vidya or Brahma Vidya. There is no Vidya or knowledge that is greater than Atma. And what does Atma Vidya contain? Atma Vidya starts with Viveka. Viveka, which is the discrimination between Anatma and Atma, or Prakriti and Purusha. Only when we know what is Atma and what is not Atma, then we can separate it and then focus on Atma. So the initial part of Brahma Vidya is understanding clearly the difference between Atma and Anatma. Now he is going to talk about Anatma here. So with this jnanam param siddhi mitogataha munayaha sarve. So all the knowledgeable people, all the jnanis, they have attained the siddhi, param siddhi, parama siddhi or moksha with this jnanam. With this jnanam that leads to eventually the atma jnanam. So, and what is the ultimate result? What do you mean by moksha? He says, idam jnanam upashritya mama sadharmyam agataha. They get the sadharmyam with me. That means they become atma swarupam themselves by understanding this vidya clearly. Then how does he start that vidya? Mama yonir mahat brahma tasmin garbham dadhamyaham sambhava sarva bhutanam tato bhavati bharata. So mama yonir mahat brahma, this mahat is the maya shakti. Maya shakti is called with so many different names. All of them are synonymous, but depending on the nature of the functionality being described, Prakriti is called with so many different names in our Shastra. And one of the names of Prakriti is Mahat. So this Mahat is used typically in Sankhya philosophy. So this Mahat Brahma, Tasmin Garbham Dadhamyaham Mama Yonihi Mahat Brahma. So I am the Parabrahma, and this Mahat is my Shakti. My Maya Shakti is Mahat. And out of that Mahat only, out that Maya Shakti or Prakriti Shakti only, Sarva Bhutanam Sambhavaha of Sarva Bhutanam, of all the conscious being, living things, they are being born out of that Prakriti only. Again, he is talking here about something being born, something being dead, although at the paramarthika level there is nothing born or dead. But again, he is jumping between vyavaharika and paramarthika, and depending on the context, we need to understand appropriately what level he is talking about. Because at the ultimate level, there is only Atma Swarupam. There is no birth, no death, nothing. So now he is saying, my power is this Mahat. My power is this Prakriti, out of which all these beings are born. Sarva yonisha kanteya murtaya sambhavantiyaha tasam brahma mahadyunihi aham bija pradarpita. I am the pita, I am the ultimate father, because I am giving the bijam, the seed for this mahat. So although Prakriti is considered as the mother, I am the father, because only by the combination of Brahman and Maya, Brahman and Prakriti, or Ishwar Prakriti, this Srishti is possible. If Brahman remains as Brahman, Srishti is not possible at all, because he remains Shivam completely. So that Shakti part, the Prakriti part, only when it combines, there's nothing to combine also, it has to come out of him. When it comes out of him and it manifests as Prakriti, only then Srishti is possible. Otherwise, he is Shivaha Sthanuhu and Brahman, which is pure consciousness. So he says, now this Prakriti, understand it to be my own Shakti. And this my own Shakti Prakriti has three modes of operation. They are also called Gunas. Three modes are called Gunas, which are Sattvam Rajastama Iti Gunaha Prakriti Sambhavaha Nivadhnanti Mahabaho Dehe Dehinam Avyayam. Nivadhnanti. These three modes of Prakriti are also called the Gunas. They are the ones that tie down this Dehi, the individual jiva, to this deham, the Prakriti. So they are the ones that are causing so many janma and mrityu cycles, and the karma phala, all these things are coming from these three modes of Prakriti, also called gunaha. And these gunas, by doing ashrayam or by attaching themselves to these three gunas of Prakriti only, all these jivas who are otherwise brahma swarupam themselves, atma swarupam themselves, they by just because of ajnanam attaching to these three gunas, they are running into these eternal cycles of birth and death. And these three gunas, what are the properties of these three gunas? These three gunas, then tatra sattvam nirmalatvat prakashakam anamayam. Out of all the three, sattvam is prakashakam. It gives jnanam, anamayam. It is faultless. And so sattvam, sattvaguna, is the one that gives rise to all noble qualities. Then rajo ragatmakam vidhi trishna sangasamudbhavam. Karma-sangena-dehinam. So this rajas, rajam, raja is ragatmakam. Raga, dvesha, these two dual modes of the mind come from this guna called rajaha. So sattvam is purity, noble qualities. Rajaha is this selfishness that comes for the jiva through this rajas, mine, not mine, I like it, I don't like it, I favor this, I don't favor this. All these dualities come from rajas. Trishna, sangha. Trishna is kamaha, desire. Sangham is attachment. So because of rajas only, we keep getting attached to so many things. But if it is only sattvaguna, then there will be no attachment. When people do a lot of sadhana and improve their sattva-guna, automatically the rajas, the amount of desire and sangha attachment goes down, because sattva is predominant and sattva-guna, it is like the insulating layer. It does not let anything stick to the mind. But rajas is what sticks things to the mind. Then tamastu ajnanajam vidhi mohanam sarvadehinam pramada alasya nidrabhihi tannivadhati bharata. So this tamo guna, which is the third of the three gunas, then ajnanajam vidhi, it is born out of pure ignorance. Out of pure ignorance only tamo guna is born. And what does tamo guna do? Mohanam sarvadehinam. It puts all the jivatmas in delusion, complete delusion. And pramada, alasya, nidrabhihi tannipadhnati. It ties down all the jivas in nidra, sleep, alasyam, which is carelessness, and pramadam, alasyam and pramadam. Pramadam is, sorry, carelessness, and alasyam is delay, delaying things, and being careless, and being sleepy, and all the things that pull the soul down into the realm of prakriti are done by this tamoguna. Tamoguna is the weight that pulls the soul down. So those are the three gunas. Okay? So what happens for these three gunas? What are the results of these three gunas? Sattvam sukhe sanjayati. When sattva is predominant, the soul, the jivatma, is in sukham. It's in always a happy state. Rajaha karmani bharata. When rajoguna is predominant, this jiva is always involved in work with the body, work with the mouth, work with the mind. So the mind and the speech and the body are never still. They are never still, and they don't like to be still. They just want to keep on working. That is the responsibility of rajas. And jnanam avrutyata tamaha pramade sanjayata. And when tamas is predominant, this jnanam avrutyata, it completely envelops any knowledge and completely envelops the jiva in ignorance and pulls the jiva into lethargy, sleep, and all the other vices that a jiva develops, like drugs, all these problems, they come due to excessive tamoguna. So sattva is lightly takes the jivatma up. Rajas is sort of in the middle, keeps people in an active state, and tamas pulls it down. So before we go further, any questions?
I want to eat that.
Can everybody please mute unless you are talking in the class? Okay. Now, after introducing these three gunas to Arjuna, now he is going to explain them further. How Rajas acts, how Tamas acts, and how Sattva acts in the body and on the mind. So I'm not going to go through every shloka. Let me see what is an appropriate shloka to describe sattva guna. Shloka 17. Let us take shloka 17. So in this shloka he says, sattvat sanjayate jnanam rajaso lobha evacha pramada mohau tamasaha bhavato ajnanam evacha. So sattvat sanjayate jnanam, when sattva is predominant, when one develops a lot of sattva guna, sanjayate jnanam, then what is the result? The result is divine knowledge. When sattva is predominant, so that is why all these spiritual sadhanas, religious sadhanas are prescribed, so that the mind becomes sattvic in nature. And sattvic mind is naturally attracted towards the atma jnanam. So sattvat sanjayate jnanam rajaso lobha evacha. So when rajas is predominant, mostly selfish kind of work. It is not evil work, it is not bad, but it is mostly selfish. The entire life is spent only in selfish work or selfish pursuits, either for oneself or one's family, one's children, one's parents, spouse, whatever it is. So the purview of that person is very, very limited. So what is in it for me? Everything, he looks at it from a transactional view. What is in it for me? So that is the result of a predominance of rajas. And pramada moho tamasaha. So when one is predominantly tamasic in nature, pramada and moha. Moha is, again, delusion. So all these ideas and actions and speech that is completely and diagonally opposite to what Shastra says, that is the responsibility of tamas. So one who is predominantly tamasic in nature, tamasic nature doesn't need to be just lethargy. It is rakshasa pravritti, asura pravritti. Any uncompletely opposite to Shastra, whatever one wants, one thinks or one says or one does, that is tamasic in nature. Because Shastra only talks about what is good for you, what elevates the soul. And if one is behaving, talking, doing things that are in a unshastric way or opposite to what Shastra says, that is pramada and moha. And that is tamas, which is acting. And urdhvam gacchanti sattvastaha madhye tishtanti rajasaha adho gacchanti tamasaha. This is very self-explanatory. When people are situated in sattva, they go up. They go up means they attain urdhva lokas. They attain punya lokas. But these are people who have attained sattva guna, but they have not yet achieved moksha. So with that sattva-guna, they get better and better realms of existence. And most people who are in rajas, they stay in this manushya loka, because rajas is nothing but a little bit of tamas, little bit of sattva, and a lot of rajas. So it's a mixed quality. So if you take humans, they have good in them, they have bad in them, they have lethargy in them, they have a little bit of evil in them, they have a little bit of divinity in them. So it's a mixed bag of all the qualities. So that is what is responsible for making the souls be born in the human realm. And of course, when one is tamas, they go to nicha yonis that are predominantly sort of neither selfish action nor noble action. So very destructive minds, destructive actions, destructive speech. Although the upadhi may be human being, but the pravritti is very asuric in nature. Those are all tamasic minds or tamasic jivas. So that is the responsible, that is the guna that is responsible for those jatas. Let me do a time check. What time is it now?
I'm 45.
44. Okay. So let me finish this in a couple of minutes. So that is the sort of sequence in which Krishna is explaining all these three gunas. Then, so what is the message he is giving to Arjuna? He is giving this message in 20, sloka number 20. What he is saying is, gunan etan atityatrin dehi deha samudbhavan janma mrityu jara dukkhaihi vimukto amrutam ashnute. So he is describing all these three, and what is his ultimate message? His ultimate message to Arjuna is that since these three gunas, although sattva is noble and rajas is selfish and tamas is asuric in nature, none of these three gunas by itself can cause the release from this janma and mrtyu. Why? Sattva, pure sattva, can only take you to higher realms of existence, maybe in heaven, maybe in another loka, satya loka, bhuvar loka, or jana loka, tapo loka, one of the urdhva loka. And tamas will take you to one of the adho lokas, and rajas will keep you here. But none of them by themselves have any power to release one completely from janma and mrtyu. And unless that release comes, this bhava-bandham is not gone and moksha is not attained. So eventually, what should be the aim of the jiva? What the aim of the jiva should be? To go from tamas to rajas to sattva, and sattva to nirgunaha. So gunan etan atitya. So you must cross these, all the three gunas. So one must be ready to reject even heavens and the swarga sukhas also, to be able to attain the permanent sukham in life. And that is what those who still remember Tattva-bodha, in Tattva-bodha, iha amutra phala bhoga viragaha. Iha is here, amutra is other world. So iha amutra phala bhoga viragaha. So this world, the results of karmas in this world and of the other world also, one should be able to reject completely to be able to qualify for moksha. So that is what here Krishna means by saying you must become a gunatitaha. Then Krishna is, Arjuna is asking, kairlinga istrin gunanetan atito bhavati prabho kima achara katan chetan trin gunanati vartate. So now you are saying one must cross these three gunas, but what are the what are the sort of characteristics of someone who has crossed these three gunas? How does that person look like when someone has crossed the three gunas? And he says, na dveshti sampravrutani na nivrutani kanchati. So one who has completely crossed the three gunas, the first characteristic of such person is that he does not have any dvesham towards anybody. And na nivrutani kanchati, na dveshti sampravrutani. So one na dveshti, one does not have any hatred towards anybody. Second, sampravrutani na kankshati, nivrutani na kankshati. He does not seek for things to come to him, or when things don't happen, he does not worry about them also. So this is the perfect karma yogi. The perfect karma yogi who completely surrenders everything to Bhagavan, and he says, if it happens, great. If it doesn't happen also, it is great because I leave everything to the decision of Bhagavan. So that is why I keep repeating that karma yoga is the very basic attitude to start developing, because everything stems from karma yoga. One may be a great bhakta, one may be a great upasaka, one may be a great, dhyana yogi or whatever, but when that concept of karma yoga is not understood and not followed, everything else sort of falls back into one of these three gunas, either sattva-guna or rajoguna or tamoguna. But only when the upasana is constantly practiced in parallel with karma yoga, only then. Karma yoga means no sankalpa, no phalam. Everything is in the hands of Bhagavan. So that is the way to go. That is why all the acharyas, karma yoga, upasana yoga, jnana yoga, they have to be parallel. One cannot be only upasana or only karma yoga. That won't work. But karma yoga is the basis. Upasana cannot be effective without karma yoga. So that is why Bhagavan is here again emphasizing on karma yoga. Then, samadukha sukha swastaha samaloshtashma kanchanaha tulya priyapriyodhiraha tulya nindatma samstitihi. And one who has perfected this gunatita sthiti, how he will be, or how that person will be, samadukha sukha swastaha. So in dukkham and sukham, his mind is equal. So dukkham, again, for the mind there is no dukkham, because he does not perceive it as dukkham. But when the dukkham comes to the body, he is samadukha sukha swastaha. He does not worry about it. And samaloshta ashma kanchanaha. So loshta is a lump of mud. Ashma is a stone, and kanchana is gold. So one will be able to see all of them equally, which means he doesn't have really any particular penchant or liking towards amassing this material riches. Because by that time that maturity comes, one would have realized the futility of the material riches, and one will be able to learn and see the limitations of these material riches. Then tulya priya apriyo dhiraha. So whether somebody likes him or does not like him also, it doesn't bother him, because for him, according to the previous shloka, right, for him he doesn't hate anybody. So if other people either like him or hate him, it doesn't bother him. Tulya ninda atma samstuti. Again, anybody is doing ninda or samstuti, stuti or ninda, for him it doesn't matter, because again he is seeing himself as the atma swarupam and not as the body. Only when that bodily consciousness is there, then there is a sense of sense of ninda or stuti. But when that bodily consciousness is not there, everything is atmaswarupam only. So that is why whenever we go to acharyas or when we do namaskaram, immediately the only thing they say is sarvadeva namaskaraha yeshavam pratigacchati. Whether you are coming and doing namaskaram to me, or whether you are criticizing me, I am not keeping anything. For your satisfaction, you are doing it. And for your good, you are doing it. But I am not keeping any of those things. Everything goes to Yeshava only. Sarvadeva namaskaraha. Yeshavam prati gacchati. So, and then, finally he says, what is the way to achieve this sthiti? And for a soul to achieve this sthiti, mamchayo avyabhijarena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samati itaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. So previously he talked about karma yoga. So how one should be is in the path of karma yoga. In addition to karma yoga, what should be developed? Mamchayo avyabhijarena bhakti yogena sevate. So one should develop that bhakti yoga also, or that upasana yoga also. And only when they go together, they will eventually lead into jnana. Bhakti by itself or karma yoga by itself is not effective enough to lead to jnana. Only when bhakti and karma yoga go hand in hand together, then they will lead to jnana and moksha. Brahmano hi pratishtaham amrutasya avyayasya cha shashvatasya cha dharmasya sukhasya aikantikasya cha. So how one should be able to eventually view Bhagavan? One should be able to eventually view Bhagavan at the end of this karma yoga and upasana yoga, not as a personal god, not with a particular name and form, not as one's favorite murti, but how one should be able to eventually recognize Bhagavan. Brahmano hi pratishtaham. One should be able to recognize Bhagavan as the Parabrahman himself. Amrutasya avyayasya cha, that amruta swarupam, which is the Satchidananda swarupam. Shashvataha dharmaha, so the entire dharma itself is Bhagavat swarupam. Sukhasya aikantikasya cha, so aikantika sukham, which is the ultimate bliss, which is atma anandam or brahmananda swarupam. So that is how one should be able to eventually visualize Bhagavan, to be able to become a gunatita and enjoy this jnana yoga bliss. So start with karma yoga and then also perform or practice bhakti yoga, avyabhichara bhakti yoga, and then along with these two, one should be able to slowly get into achieving the qualities of sadhana chatushtaya sampatti, and all these together will lead one into the realization that sarvam khalvidam brahma, everything that I am seeing around me, including myself, is that brahma swarupam, and that paramatma is there everywhere, not only in my puja room, not only in the temple, not only in any kshetra that I visit, but in every atom, every place, every time, he is present. And that is where one can sort of graduate from that ekarupa bhakti to visvarupa bhakti, from visvarupa bhakti to arupa upasana, and from there go to jnana. And how that visvarupa upasana should be done, how one should be able to slowly start seeing Bhagavan above and beyond one's own achyamurti, one's own favorite form of Bhagavan, is what will be described in chapter 15, which is the Purushottama Yoga. So with this, Chaturdashodhyayaha is complete. Shri Krishna Arpanamastu. Any quick questions?
Guru Garu, you mentioned Avyabhichara Bhakti, right? Of course, I've heard a lot of interpretations of that and some misinterpretations. Could you please elaborate on what Avyabhichara means in this context?
So in this shloka, what Krishna means by Avyabhichara Bhakti, is that what you're asking?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because I heard lot of wrong interpretations of that. Obvious wrong interpretations of that. How do we clarify that Avyabhichara? The way I ran into it from other people is that, pick one god, Narayana, and then when you pray to anybody else, then you are actually violating this principle. Any other form. Go ahead.
Now I get it. If you are immediately assigning a name and a form to this Avyabhichara Bhakti, you are completely ignoring what Krishna is saying in the very next shloka. In the very next shloka, he is not saying, I am of the form of Narayana, or I am of the form of this Devaki Nandana Krishna, or I am of the form of Dasaratha Rama. He is saying, Brahmano hi pratishtaham, I am the supreme Brahman. I am the Amrita Swarupam, I am the Avyaya Swarupam, I am the Shashvatam, I am the form of Dharma, and I am the form of the ultimate bliss, Sukhasya Ikanti Kasyacha. In which word did he describe that I am only Narayana, nobody else? He did not. So nowhere in Bhagavad Gita he is saying I am only of this name and form. Every step of the way he is saying, get out of this this nama rupa chain, both for yourself, prakriti, and also for Bhagavan. But the problem with the mind is that the mind needs, because mind is used to names and forms, the mind needs a name and form. And depending on one's purva karma and one's propensity, a particular name and form will be suitable and will be liked. So that is why it is called Ishta Devata. So that Ishta Devata can be there. But our shastras everywhere, take any shastra, starting from the Vedas, the Upanishads, Brahma Sutras, Bhagavad Gita, Puranas, Dharma Shastras, everything that we see, Kavyas, nowhere it is emphasized that one name or one form is over the other. So here, in what way does Krishna mean Avyabhichara Bhakti? Avyabhichara Bhakti here means what he earlier talked about in Karma Yoga. In Karma Yoga, unless you have that Atyantika Bhakti, or unless you have that Sharanagati mindset towards Bhagavan, you will not really be able to develop a mindset of doing Bhagavad Arpanam and taking everything as Bhagavan's prasada. If you don't really, or if you are not really convinced of Bhagavan's karma phaladatrutvam or karma adhishtatrutvam, if you are not really convinced of Bhagavan's sarveshwaratvam, if you are not really convinced of Bhagavan's Sarvantaryamitvam. So all those things, if you are not convinced about, then what kind of Karma Yoga will you develop? In what way are you convinced to go into your puja room and stand before that 3-inch murti and say, I bow to you and I offer all my karmas to you? Your ego really stands up and says, why should I do that? That is just a 3-inch metal figurine, and here I am a 6-foot guy working in this big firm, earning my living, and I have this big house. All so the ego immediately jumps up higher than ourselves. So unless you have that atyantika bhakti, you are able to see, because Bhagavan rarely comes in front of us in all his glory to convince us of his glory these days. So mm-hmm. how one should be able to develop that bhakti towards him is by being able to see that sarvantaryamitvam through so many means. That is why we go to this satsangam, we read all these Purana stories, all these things that we develop from childhood onwards, so that although he himself does not walk into our life convincing of his glory, we are still convinced by all these evidences that he is the one who will protect us. He is the one who will save us. Who is the one who has to deliver us from ajnana to jnana, deliver us from ignorance to the divine knowledge. And how that bhakti will be developed? Only by having that firm faith. So here it is, that is why he is called Avyabhichara.
Mm-hmm.
So that firm faith in Bhagavan only will be helpful for developing that karma yoga. And
okay, so basically it's not referring to different manifestations of Bhagavan, but Bhagavan versus all the materialistic
Bhagavan versus, yes,
okay, got it.
So Bhagavan versus my own ability, Bhagavan versus the ability of this world to save me, Bhagavan versus my bank account, Bhagavan versus my social position, Bhagavan versus my status, Bhagavan versus anything that I think will save me, that I am banking on. Because all these things will fail you at one point of the time. So when you do upasana of any of these things and dedicate your life to any of these things, you are bound to fail. So bhakti should be towards that entity that will never fail to save us. So that is the avyabhichara bhakti that Krishna is talking about. Not one form or one name over the other. If only one form can save us, one name can save us, then Vyasacharya doesn't have to take so much pain to describe so many Vaidika murtis in our Shastra.
Hmm. Andamindan.
Okay. Anything else? Okay, we will stop here then. Om Yatra Yogeshwara Krishnaha Yatra did we complete? 17 completed. Kuru Se Ganga Sagara Gamana. That is completed. Okay, let us go to 18. Suramandira Tarumula Nivasaha.
Suramandira Tarumula Nivasaha.
भूतलमजिनं वासः
शय्या
भूतलमजिनं वासः
सर्वपरिग्रह भोगत्यागः कस्य सुखं न करोति विरागः
कस्य सुखं न करोति विरागः
भज गोविन्दं
भज गोविन्दं गोविन्दं भज धनते
सम्प्राप्ते
So Acharya previously talked about people who are posing as jnanis, people who are posing as sannyasis, people who are in the household life but have not developed any penchant towards atmajnanam. And in the last shloka, people who are karmatha. Karmatha. Karmatha means one who is completely absorbed in the rituals. Absorbed in what the Shastra asks to do without understanding why Shastra asks you to do it. That person is called in Shastra as a karmataha. So all these kinds of people, how they are missing the point and how they are not able to achieve the goal of life, Acharya has been showing in the previous shlokas. Now in this shloka, Acharya is now painting the picture of a person who is on the opposite side. One who is not involved in any of these activities, but one who has realized accurately the goal of life and lives his life accordingly. That doesn't mean that this is the only way to live life, because Acharya is going to talk about other options also in the further shlokas, but this is one example of a person who has realized what is important, or what is important in life and what is not important in life, and lives life accordingly. And what is the description of such a person? Sura mandira taru mula nivasaha. Nivasaha means one who lives. Taru mula. Taru mula means the base of a tree. Sura mandira taru mula is one who lives under a tree near a temple. So automatically we get the picture of this person whose house is not a big mansion, but the base of a tree in a temple. Shayya Bhutalam. He doesn't have a king-size bed. Only the Bhutalam is his Shayya. The ground is his bed. Ajinam Vasaha. He doesn't have all the latest clothes from the malls, but the ajinam is his vasaha. Vasaha means clothes. Ajinam is the deer skin. He is wearing just the skin of a deer as his cloth. Sarva parigraha bhoga tyagaha. He has left tyagam. He has left sarva parigraha tyagaha, sarva bhoga tyagaha. Sarva bhoga, all the luxuries of life he has completely left. And sarva parigraha tyagaha, also he has completely left. Parigraha is possessing. Bhoga is enjoying. Parigraha is acquiring and possessing. So acquiring, possessing of anything and enjoying anything, he has tyagaha, he has completely left. And kasya sukham nakaroti viragaha. So such a viragaha, vairagyam, one who has developed vairagyam, is called a viragaha or viragi, one who is still desiring things is called a ragi, one who has left desiring things is called a viragi or a viragaha. Or the quality of a viragaha is vairagyam. So one who has vairagyam is a viragaha. Kasya sukham nakaroti viragaha. Acharya is questioning, what sukham, what happiness does he not bring, or not, what does he not enjoy, what happiness does he not have? Because the happiness that comes with possessions only stays very temporarily. The possession can bring happiness only as long as it lasts. So one of the classes, we talked about how this possession can bring dukkham. Dukkham means sorrow. Possessions can bring sorrow by their presence and by their absence also. So if you are desiring the possession of something, and if it is not there, that absence of that possession will bring dukkha. But if you have something that you don't want to have, the presence of it will bring dukkha. So something that you want that is not there will bring dukkha by absence. Something that you don't want which is there will bring dukkha by its presence. So, but that does not mean that sukham or dukkham is in that possession or in that thing or in that material. Because the same thing that might bring dukkham to one person may bring sukham to another person. Or that may bring sukham to one person may bring dukkham to another person. There are so many examples that we can think of in our own life where at one point what we thought of was sukham is now the cause of dukkham. At one point we thought something, buying something might bring sukham. That is why we keep on buying things and fill the house with buying things. And every spring we need to start cleaning up. Every summer we need to start cleaning up and take them all and dump them into charity. We keep on buying and we keep on getting rid of things. Why? Because our mentality is like that. We don't know what brings sukham to us. We cannot decide what brings sukham to us. We do not have knowledge of what brings sukham to us. That sukham that we think something will give, we keep on endlessly searching for it. Maybe the next house will bring sukham. Maybe the next car will bring sukham. Maybe the next possession will bring sukham. Maybe the next latest electronics or the TV will bring sukham. Maybe the next jewelry will bring sukham. Maybe the next shiny thing in the market will bring sukham. Our search is endless. Why? Because the society is dictating what should bring sukham to us. And we are victims of that propaganda that possessing something will bring sukham to me. And that is why this entire world goes on and this entire world economy goes on, because everybody is searching for that sukham in something that they possess or something that they want to possess or something that they want to get rid of. Somebody getting rid of something is going to be some other person's possession. So, this is how the entire prakriti works and entire world operates and the jivas within the world operate. Because of that endless pursuit for sukham linked to material possessions. But show me one person ever in history that said, I have everything that I need and I am completely happy with them. Until the moment of death, there is some dissatisfaction or the other about something either that we already have or something that we don't have. If we don't have it, until the moment of death, we keep worrying that I didn't get it, I didn't get it, I didn't get it. Something that we already have, I didn't get rid of it, I didn't get rid of it, I didn't get rid of it. So this entire pursuit of acquiring and disposing of things is dictating our so-called happiness. But in all of these transactions, the actual happiness that we derive is very, very, very infinitesimal. Is 99% dukkham and 1% sukham. So when that sukham is so fleeting, so impermanent, so temporal in nature, and so far no one has been able to compute the equation of the combination of material things that will give permanent happiness, Shastras came up with the solution. The solution does not lie in constantly replacing things, replacing people, replacing relationships, replacing situations, replacing our position, and searching for happiness in the next moment. Happiness does not lie in that. You keep doing that in infinite number of combinations all your life, you still will not achieve happiness. But Shastra gave one solution for happiness. What is it? Na karmana na prajaya dhanena tyagena ike amrutatva manashu. Na karmana na prajaya na dhanena amrutatvam anashuhu. By karma amrutatvam will not come. By praja amrutatvam will not come. By dhanam amrutatvam will not come. Amrutatvam will come only by one and only one quality, tyagena ekena amrutatvam anashuhu. Only by tyagam amrutatvam will come. That is why our Shastra puts so much emphasis on dhanam, charity. Tyagam, tyagam, give away what you have. That is what we find in all these people who have earned so much money. Take the, you know, top wealthiest people in this world. After they achieved everything, all the success, all the money, they don't know what else to do. They turn to charitable activity. Because that is how the mind is built. After there is no other material possession to acquire, the mind gets tired. There is nothing that I cannot acquire. What else do I do? I mean, how many thousands of cars can I have? How many millions of suits can I have? How many, you know, jewelry? How much jewelry can I have? What else can I have? Even after that, I have to eat only one plate of food. I cannot eat more than that. So the mind turns towards something else. And that something else people find by starting to give away what they have and seeing some of that happiness in other people. But that is only a very limited definition of tyagam. The real definition of tyagam that Shastra talks about is vairagya, viragaha. Not only the tyagam of dravyam, tyagam of possessions, but tyagam of sankalpa, tyagam of kamam. Because even that person who is constantly giving away millions of dollars has desire for something or that inside. It may not be material things, but something else. Because even after giving away those millions of dollars, people are still not happy. They are not achieving that happiness. And Shastra says, you can achieve happiness not by hoarding, not by collecting, not by amassing, not by possessions, but only by Tyagam or Vairagyam. And that Vairagyam has to start from the thought level, not at the body level, at the thought level. The thought level Vairagyam will insulate the mind from any desire. And only when the mind is insulated from any desires, it does not run around possessing. The possessing nature of the mind doesn't have to limit itself to the physical possessions. It could be possessiveness about people, possessiveness about relationships, possessiveness about intangible things. It doesn't necessarily be possessiveness about dollars. It could be possessiveness about anything that binds the mind. The problem is the binding of the mind. The problem is not having dollars in hand. So, to sort of emphasize this idea, again, Bhartrihari gave a very, very beautiful shloka. He talks about bhayam, the bhayam that the possessions bring. We know that possessions bring sukham, but what bhayam do the possessions bring? So in his shloka, he says, bhoge roga bhayam. Bhoge roga bhayam means when you are having a lot of fun, immediately the worry is about the health getting affected. That part at least most of us know. We are trying to restrict our diets, we do exercise, all this because we know that a lot of physical enjoyment, physical indulgence is not good for us. Because that is corroborated by science. That is why we are convinced. Because science says it. But when Shastra says it, it doesn't matter. But science says it. Science says, if you consume a lot of fat, you will get sick. If you consume a lot of sugar, you will get sick. If you consume a lot of X, Y, and Z, you will get sick. So we try to limit all of them. So we are doing the tyagam of bhogam because we don't want to get rogam. So this bhoge roga bhayam. So when we want to enjoy and indulge in things, immediately in the back of the mind that roga bhayam is there. Why we are not able to take more than two or three sweets? Because immediately all the numbers in the blood report will come in front of our eyes. So, bhoge roga bhayam. But science may only stop there, but Shastra, being Shastra, talks about so many other things in which bhayam is there. So, Bhartrihari is listing all of them. So, he says, bhoge roga bhayam. Kule chyuti bhayam. Kule chyuti bhayam. Okay, I'm not so worried about my possessions or my indulgences, but I have pride about my kulam, my birth, my caste, my community. Especially, the parents who have migrated here, they have this worry, especially when there are kids ready to be married, that is the bhayam that the parents have. Whether I'll get a son-in-law or a daughter-in-law from my own community or not, my own kulam or not, my own caste or not, my own region or not. So all this bhayam is there. Why? Because one takes pride in one's own kulam, the community, the caste, the sense of belonging, the identity that one has established. So the risk of identifying oneself with that kulam is that chyuti bhayam. Chyuti means falling down. So there is a bhayam of falling down from that identity. Whether my kids will be able to uphold that identity or not, the parents are worried. Just like their parents were worried when they moved to out of India, out of their family, their parents may have been worried, oh, this guy or this girl is going away to the Western world. Whether they will uphold this dharma or not, we don't know. They are worried. So the kule chuti bhayam, vitten nrupalat bhayam. Nrupala is a king. So when you amass a lot of money, lot of possessions, lot of property, immediately the tax man will come. So either taxes or you are worried about someone might steal it, someone might take it away, someone might harass me. Especially in third world countries, all this harassment and mafia and all those things. So even when you have a lot of money, you cannot show it. You have to secretly put it all in your treasury and live like an ordinary man. Otherwise, it will be all taken away. So vitten rupalat bhayam, mane rainya bhayam. If I have a lot of name and fame in the society, I am always worried about dainya bhayam. What if suddenly I lose all this and I have to stand in line like a common person? That is the biggest worry all these politicians have, of losing their status. Why? Because from the time they lose the status, they won't get the same treatment. The VVIP treatment that they have, they won't get. So that is why they want to hold on to that chair until the moment of death. Why? Because they are addicted to that treatment. They are addicted to that sense of power. So that mane dainya bhayam, even if we are not those politicians, at least when we have earned such good name in society, we are worried. Oh, what will happen if someone may tarnish it? And that is what happens in politics and business all the time. When someone is making name, immediately so many mudslinging stories come out into the media. 23 years back, this person did this. 20 years back, this person did this. They want to highlight it. They want to make a big story out of it. Why? Because they want to drag the name down. So that mane dainya bhayam. So even if I want to establish a name in the society, I am constantly worried about getting dragged down. Bale ripu bhayam. If I have a lot of strength, either physical strength or financial strength or any kind of strength, immediately there is a competitor. Immediately there is an enemy. Immediately there is some undercutting. Immediately somebody is scheming to somehow damage either my reputation or my shakti. So that constant fear is there. Rupe jaraya bhayam. When I pride myself about my rupam, I am very handsome looking, very beautiful looking, I am very fair, I am so nice to look at, then jaraya bhayam. Oh, immediately the bhayam is jara. Jara is old age. The moment one silver hair appears in the mirror, that torture starts. What will happen? What will happen? What will happen? And that is the reason of this $1 billion makeup industry. Because we want to hide those imperfections. Because of the bhayam of the old age that we have. We should not appear old. We should not appear old to anybody. so that jarabhayam is always there. Shastre vadibhayam, okay, let us leave all those things. Let me only focus on shastradhyayam. Then vadibhayam is there. At least this is true. In olden days, when you are a great Shastra Pandita, immediately you have to face a Vadi. Vadi means a Pandita that who wants to challenge you and who wants to win and who wants to gain the favor of the king that is supporting you. So that king will leave you and appoint him in his court. But here, the same thing happens in modern society also. That is why there is so much worry about these intellectual rights. If intellectual rights are not protected, so many things may happen. People might cheat, people might steal your plans, all those things are there. So even if you are genuinely talented and if you want to do something good to the society, you are unable to do it because you are worried that something bad might happen. Gune khalabhayam. If I am a very good, virtuous person, I am worried about some papam or the other. Even by mistake, if I do papam, that khalam, that papam will come. So I have to watch every small step of mine every single day. So that mind is not peaceful. The mind is always worried about, oh, this is a mistake, that is a mistake, I should not be doing this, should not be doing that. The mind is constantly worried about, so this is one side effect of knowing too much Shastram. So when you know too much Shastram and you cannot balance it with the ultimate goal of life, then you become, how Acharya has described earlier as karmata. So you are so worried in the right way, wrong way, should I do this, should I not do this, should I face it this way, should I face it that way, should I put it facing east or west or north or south? It's a constant worry about how to do things. That there is no peace of mind at all about what we are doing. So let us not worry about all these things. Then what? Kaye kritantat bhayam. So even if I am not worried about any of these things, finally, one bhayam is there for every jivatma or every jivi, that is krutha. Krutantat bhayam. Krutantaha is yama. Yama bhayam is there common for every single jiva, not only manushyas, but tiryakjantus also. So fear of death is always there. Even if nothing, no other worry is there, that fear of death is always there. So Bhartrihari says, sarvam vastu bhayanvitam. Every single thing that you take in this world, including your own body, is filled with bhayam only. Sarvam vastu bhayanvitam bhuvi nrunam. In this bhumi, for people, everything is filled with bhayam. Then what is the recourse? The recourse is, sarvam vastu bhayanvitam bhuvi nrunam vairagyam eva abhayam. The abhayam is only one thing and one thing only, vairagyam. Why, when that vairagyam is there, you are not worried about anything. You are neither worried about something coming in or something not being there. Something when you have, you are not worried. Something when you don't have, you are not worried. Just like the person that is described in this shloka, Suramandira Taru, Mula Nivasaha Shayya Bhutalam Ajinam Vasah Sarva Parigraha Bhogatyagaha Asya Sukham Nasaruti Viragaha. For that person, what Sukham is not there? Every imaginable Sukham he has. Acharya, Shankaracharya has also written a beautiful stotra or panchakam called Kaupina Panchakam. So Kaupinam is this lion cloth that these sannyasis wear. And describing the greatness of that Kaupinam, Acharya has given that panchakam. It's called Kaupina Panchakam. So he says, Kaupinavantaha khalu bhagyavantaha. He says. So one that possesses that Kaupinam alone, he is the most bhagyavantaha. He is the most virtuous man. He is the most, you know, prosperous man in the world. Because when you possess nothing, you cannot lose anything. But again, the practical implication of it is that for most people who are in this society, living in the way that we are living, it is unavoidable to have possessions. It is unavoidable to have relationships. It is unavoidable to have all these material transactions. It is unavoidable unless we are paramaviragis and we are ready to leave everything and then be like this person. Those things are mandatory. Those things are unavoidable. So how do we deal with it? How do we deal with it? When these things are unavoidable, how do we deal with it? This is good for an ideal sadhaka. This is good. One can leave everything. One can go live at the base of the tree in a temple. Whoever comes and drops something to eat, I will eat. If not, I will do upavasam. And my only worry is about the moksha sthiti. But whereas 99% of the people are not in that state and cannot be in that state or cannot even hope to go into that state, then what? Are we in a hopeless state? Acharya says, don't worry. Don't worry. Even if you cannot be in that ideal state, at least you can develop something like that while you are here, while you are in the situation that you are. How to develop it and what is the effect of developing it and how one can look at every situation and still derive that vairagyam out of those things, Acharya describes in next shloka, which we will see in next class. Questions? Questions will stop here. Om Purnamada Purnam Purnat Purnam Gachyate
Purnamadaya Purnamadaya
Sahana Vavatu
Sahana.